listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
Welcome back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show with O.T., the early bird, and a little bit of the prof. O.T., we got our next guest. We got on the line, we have Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham. O.T.?
Absolutely, man. Dr. Dunham has been one of my contributors for several years now. I think one of the leaders in trying to get this community to take a sane and sober approach to deal with mental health. Dr. Dunham, first of all, how are you? How are your family? And thank you for all your years of support with WBOK and Equity Media. We appreciate you.
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Doc, you know, we do our segment, Mentally Speaking, with Mr. Sims, a lot of our contributors. You and your team at Metropolitan, you guys have contributed throughout this region. I don't know if you listened to the report by Dr. Havens, and if you're following this whole national trend about looking at zip codes and where people live in terms of their quality of life. I don't know if you listened when we talked to the governor about mental health and not making the same mistakes we made post-Katrina, but not investing in mental health. But can you kind of weigh into this trend now, you know, how we're not, you know, how we're kind of looking at not just how people live, but where they live as it relates to their quality of life or even their mental health or approach to life?
Yeah, I think it goes without saying that there are sectors of the community and areas in this city and every city, really, especially urban cities, where individuals who are economically disadvantaged are disadvantaged in a number of ways. The header is economically disadvantaged, but it's disadvantaged in a number of ways. Health disparities are more profound, both mental and physical disparities for a lot of reasons, reasons that have been talked about and continue to be talked about, largely owing to the fact that it's not a prioritized population. Access to health care, because health care is not proximal, or the quality of health care is not where it needs to be. There are clearly studies that show that African Americans, for example, are less likely to get the same quality of care if they don't see a person of color. There's just a different level of attention and attunement to the same conditions if you are of the same ethnic background than if you aren't. And so it is a global issue of disparity if you live in certain zip codes that often equate to a certain economic status, but the you know, the economic part of it links us to so many different advantages or disadvantages if we are without. So it's the same conversation over and over again.
Dr. Dunham, in a lot of communities, mental health care is perceived as being a luxury. Is it a luxury or is it a necessity?
It's an absolute necessity, no less than physical health care. I don't think anybody would debate the fact that if you've got high blood pressure, it needs to be treated. If you have a foot injury or a fracture, it needs to be treated. Well, fractures and injuries to the brain are equally important, and emotions are part of the functionality of the brain. In fact, if your brain is not functioning well, your body won't, because it's the dictator. It's the commander in charge of what happens physically. So you have to prioritize mental illness. So no, and mental health is not a luxury, not at all. Now, we've bought into that too. African Americans have bought into the fact that we can ignore our mental health, or we can use non-traditional methods to treat a physical organ. We are spiritually based, absolutely, and our spiritual connection is key to our sanity, if you will. But we're also physical beings. We are made up of cells that require a certain kind of interaction with medications and with our physical environment. And so mental health needs stabilizing. It needs continuity of care. It needs attention on a regular basis, just like physical health. So, no, it's not a luxury. It's a necessity, and it's a necessity for every single one of us that we have it. As such, state systems, including Louisiana, fund services. So there's federal and state funding that is made available through agencies like our agency, Metropolitan Human Services District. We are one of 10 such agencies across the state that the government dedicates funding. We don't have an issue with needing money. We have an issue with getting people to come into care and recognizing that they need to take advantage of it. So public services are available for mental illness and substance use treatment. Changing people's mindsets about it, though, is a bigger challenge for us on a day-to-day basis.
And that was actually my next question, OT. I was going to ask, how do we get beyond the stigmatizing of, in the Black community, that we say anybody that has some mental issues, that they're crazy and stuff like that. How do we get beyond that, Dr. Dunham?
Well, you know, the word, it was interesting. When I trained as a psychiatrist, I was looking for the word crazy, right? And the word crazy doesn't even appear anywhere in any of our nomenclature, any of our diagnostic criteria. It is it's a common term that we use to describe a set of behaviors, but it is it's very disruptive and problematic to describe mental illness. So it's very stigmatizing. And so first of all, we need to get rid of the word crazy in the conversations about people who are suffering from a condition that originates in their brain or within their emotional system. So that also is helped by promoting the fact that there are many people who have mental challenges. So when you see public officials, or you see celebrities, or you see people who have notoriety taking the podium and saying that they too have had mental illness, it helps to destigmatize it. But in our everyday conversations, those of us who know that this is not okay, we have to have those conversations with our family members and with our friends to spread that word, just like the anti-racism movement very much is about people having conversations within their own circle and checking people on behaviors that are inappropriate within their own circle. It's the same kind of activity that has to happen. I'm not going to change my opinion about something if I don't respect the person who's sharing that different opinion with me. But if I respect the person's opinion, then I might rethink how I think about it. So it's all of our responsibility to destigmatize mental illness.
But Dr. Dunham, I think you guys are taking that approach, especially with Metropolitan and Prop. What Metropolitan is doing now, especially in looking at this region, and it's not just New Orleans. So it's like Dr. Hibbins is taking a regional approach to the science around how people live. Dr. Dunham and Metropolitan have done the same thing. In dealing with the stereotype, Dr. Dunham, I'm noticing that you guys are investing in more community and family type events. You know, we can look forward to what we could before this pandemic, that throughout this region or throughout this area, bringing families together around mental health. Talk about why that approach now, where in the past it was usually an individual approach, not a community or a group approach. What's the difference today?
So typically, two real issues there. One is, who is the identified person with the condition? And then, does the condition singularly affect one member of the family? So usually one person is identified, but because mental illness tends to be a familial, inheritable condition, many members of the family often have symptoms or have undiagnosed experiences that for maybe decades passed down through generations were just never addressed. So if you solo out or you single out one person, and often this is what happens, one person who has like really, really overt, out of control, obvious symptoms gets stigmatized and scapegoated as the crazy one in the family or the problem in the family. When in fact, these are familial conditions, and if you pull back the curtain, you're going to see multiple people in the family who may have varying degrees of severity of those conditions or conditions that are related. And so it's like when you see one person, you need to look for the rest of the people. And so for that reason, you need to really address the whole family. So what typically happens, particularly in child care, or in the children and youth division of mental illness treatment, the child is brought in, usually prompted by behaviors at school, for which the school says, get that child medicated before they return back. So the child comes in, the mothers or parents are under pressure, which they transfer to the clinician, that I can't bring them back to school until they get treated. This is a classic scenario with ADHD, why we have so many kids on ADHD meds and are diagnosed with ADHD, when in fact, probably at least 30 to 40% of the time, it's not ADHD, but be that as it may. So the child gets brought in, and the child does have symptoms of something. But the parents are not there to get help. They're there to get help for the child. And so in the querying and in the interviewing, you realize that the parents may have had symptoms too, or there may be other kids in the family who are demonstrating symptoms, or the cousin or the sister may have had those symptoms. That's what a good evaluation does. It really does explore the entirety of the family history. Well, if you've got multiple family members who have had experiences, and this is not a color issue, this is not a race issue, this is generally how brain disorders work. So if you find that multiple family members have issues, that's an opportunity to change the conversation and to not just let the child be identified as the problem, but to help the family understand that, you know, if this child's going to get better, we really have to treat the family system to get better, because children are symptomatic of their environment most of the time. And sometimes the kid really doesn't have a major disorder. The child is having symptoms in reaction maybe to the disorder that the parents or the adults are having, and that child is becoming mentally impaired because of that. So all of our
we have a call also, OT.
Yeah. Then, Doc, are we just late with the science, or were we just ignorant in terms of understanding mental health and its relation? Because as I'm listening to you, you know, every time I've ever filled out a medical survey, they want to know the genetic traits of my family for diabetes, for cancer, for heart trouble, for all of those other issues. Never anything about mental health, though.
Yeah. And well, you know, we are late. It's the younger of the areas in medicine. Really, it is. It is okay. The least studied. It is more studied now. The brain is just such a complex organ. And the other thing is too, you can't draw a blood test for mental illness and check it in a lab like you can blood pressure, take a blood pressure, or check blood cell count or infection. It's not that kind of condition. It is all about trained to understand human behavior and to interpret it correctly.
We got Mr. Solomon who's been holding. You're on live with Dr. Dunham, OT, the early bird, and the prof. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
Look, and I want to tie this into what the gentleman did, the guest you had prior to this late, this doctor here, because it all ties in. Two things control this world: politics and religion. Politics is in everything from flushing your toilet to buying a home. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
There are no mistakes in politics. Everything has been drawn out, set up, and that's how it goes. And religion, for lack of a better word, controls you after you die. We, as a people, we suffer from PTSD. Post-traumatic slave syndrome. And we have the residual effects of it. We have been the subject of test, poking, pushing, pulling since we've been here. From Tuskegee to Henrietta Lacks to medical apartheid. Nothing what this doctor is saying is new. Nothing what the gentleman before her is saying is new. We are black people as a race. of the boogeyman and Pablo's dog. We have been testing it from every which angle you could think of. Every which angle you can think of. And we have a tendency of validating that by doing some of the things we're doing and saying some of the things we say. I look at women. I truly hate with a passion when I hear a black woman say, I'm a strong black woman. Well, damn it, look at your history. You know what you are. And when you say you're a strong black woman, you open the door to being misused and abused because, oh, she's strong. She can take it. We can do anything to her we want. The only other woman and mother that's been unprotected, abused, misused, accused, and disrespected than a black woman is Mother Earth. So when I was downtown, I come up in Desire. And I discovered one thing when the Black Panthers were down there. Everywhere we are in this country, you have to go across railroad tracks. And if they've never put us in areas that was conducive to our benefit. This system wasn't designed to benefit us. And the laws that we are living under, they weren't made for us. That's why it's so difficult for us to follow. It wasn't made for us. So we as a people have to understand, Oliver, is just like you say, ain't nobody going to save us but us. And I don't know if it's Ms. Jones, but I'm going to attribute this to her because it was a natural fact. This country needs mental health. Help. We are all mentally disturbed because you can't live in this country and go through the things we've gone through and not be affected mentally. And that goes for white people, too, because guess what, white people? When you keep your foot on my neck, you're going to experience the same thing I'm experiencing, just in a different form.
Thank you,
Mr. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. With OT, he said a lot. We got to take a break and process some of this. But we promise we're coming right back with this great conversation with Dr. Rochelle Dunham. OT the Early Bird and myself right here on the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM, What New Orleans is Talking About.
You're listening to the Good Morning Show with Oliver OT Thomas.
Welcome back to the Good Morning Show with OT, the Early Bird, and a little bit of the Prof. Man, you only going to get this kind of conversation right here from 6 to 10 on the Wake Up Show with the Professor and Reagan, and then the Good Morning Show. OT, they only going to get it right here on WBOK. That's the only place they're going to get it.
Amen. Leading the way, the fastest growing station, Equity Media, WBOK, from 5 in the morning, man, to late at night, even the rebroadcast. Fastest growing media outlet and radio station in the Gulf South. Dr. Dunham, Mr. Solomon said a lot from women to what we ought to already know to our position in this country. Doc, any comments or response to Mr. Solomon's comments?
Yeah, he did make a lot of comments, and a lot of his comments I absolutely agree with. I do want to say that to the point of post-traumatic stress, as he says, slave disorder, but post-traumatic stress disorder, it is true that we all have a degree of trauma just inherited from our history and then the continual perpetuation of harm against people of color just continues to re-traumatize and reawaken all of those symptoms that characterize what is technically PTSD. But people suffer that in varying degrees. Of course, if you actually had an assault or somebody really close to you has had an actual assault, then it's going to be much more damaging for you than it is for everybody else. And it's true. This country is ill in a very broad way because of what has been received as trauma or perpetrated as trauma, and it is ongoing. Emotional trauma, when there's nothing physical happening, is the constant. And so most people say that they have been emotionally abused, emotionally abused with a job interview, emotionally abused with not getting housing, like you'd be emotionally abused by someone who you care about or don't care about, not to mention all the physical abuse. So the global statement he made that this country is ill, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, racism alone is a mental illness as far as I'm concerned because of the far-reaching impact it has on people's functionality. So to the comment about women, you know, black women have had a very difficult, have been in a very difficult place for a very long time in this country of having to carry more of the weight and the load, of their fair share of the weight and the load. And so it's an adaptive function. You say it enough, you believe it. No, I don't think all black women are as strong as they say they are, just because everybody is not strong in the same way. And it's a true burden to carry all of that weight and load. Being a single parent is not at all an easy thing. When raising kids, there's a two-parent challenge. Being the primary, the breadwinner in the home with no other financial or emotional support, that's a very difficult thing that women have to do. And not all women do it well. It's a fallacy that just because you're black, you are doing such a great job at managing all of this. So it does continue to perpetuate the myth that just because you're a black woman, you're supposed to be able to carry more. And so we're given more than our fair share in a lot of instances, or we are getting given a lot of backlash because we're perceived as having so much more capability or so much more strength. That's intimidating also for a lot of people. To have a black woman in the midst, whether she's capable or not.
I want to stay there because we've had Carol Smith, one of our contributors, a consultant, a businesswoman, Timberland Sams, man, you know, one of our leading outreach community organizers. I'll never forget when someone made a comment about Superwoman when we were on the show, and she said, man, she says, look, I'm tired of being called Superwoman. Carol Smith, one of our most successful political consultant businesswomen in the regions. And then another African-American female who owns a very prosperous business said they wish that they could share or split those responsibilities with someone else or rely or not have to be perceived as Superwoman or this strong woman all the time. We're hearing more of that, you know, and I think you're analyzing it the right way. Where is that coming from? Because, Doc, what you're just basically saying is that when we talk about stereotypes, there's also a stereotype associated to what is perceived as the strong black woman. But more and more women are saying, hey, hold on a second now. Let's not get it twisted. There are times I'd rather just be a woman, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's such a disadvantage for black women to be put in that position. Because we women, as a result, often get left. So, and what I mean by that is the advantages of being considered to have need is that somebody's going to try to fulfill them. But if you presume that I don't have any needs, then who's thinking about me? You're not. You're thinking about other places where there is need. And black women have so many needs. I think, though, black women also... my sisters have perpetuated some of that.
Some of them need too much.
Well, I'm sorry.
Some of them need too much.
That's just the professor being the professor. Keep going.
Yeah, I'm just telling the truth. That's all.
So I think you know you can say some men need too much, right? So I mean that goes both ways.
You met the right one.
In terms of, let me try to keep this on line here.
go ahead, Doc. You got the right one. If you want to tie up props, I'm just going to listen. Go ahead. Go ahead, Dr. Dunham.
All right. Okay. So, you know, but what I was about to say is that my sisters have contributed to that, too, because we have done this safe face thing and have bought into our own lie to ourselves that we, you know, we don't, I could do it without a man, or I could do it by myself, or I make X amount of dollars, so I'm good and all. And, you know, you're not, we have a totality of need that makes us healthy. It, you can't have one thing being met without some of these other things being met and be completely healthy and maximally functional. And so to that degree, I think, and we've done it because it's our situation. And so we try to, you know, you got to do what you got to do to function. But I think we also sell ourselves short by sometimes assuming that we have more than we really have, and that we don't need, you know, some things met in our lives. So, it, you know, it's the perception of us, but it's also to some degree our perception of ourselves that contributes to that.
Dr. Dunham, I just have a quick question. Are there perceived roles within the context of a family? Because my wife is constantly telling me that that's what the man's supposed to do. Every time I turn around, she said, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, if, whether or not I'm cooking a dinner or I'm doing this or doing that, she said, well, that's what you're supposed to do. Do we have clearly defined roles when it comes to our families?
Well, we have been acculturated into believing that there are defined roles. And there are some roles that are defined. There are, but there are a lot of things that need to be done by the person who's best suited to do it. And that then gets it done. So, for example, if you're the financial-minded person in the family, your wife's more financially astute than you are, and she should probably be managing the finances for the house, and not you. If you're not that person, because financially you'll be in a bad space just because you're a man and there's some perceived notion that men ought to manage the money. If you are a better cook, you know, and you love the kitchen and you love doing that, then you need to be the person who's predominantly doing the cooking. It really is about getting it done. The healthiest thing is who's best suited to do what.
I think she think I'm suited to do everything.
Well, there
then,
you go.
Then that's your role.
Then that's my role. I answered my own question, huh?
There you did. You set yourself up there. Yeah, well, do it all. But, you know, there are lots of things that your wife is better suited. So, but in truth, we all have bought into a lot of stereotypes about a lot of things, and roles in family is just one of those many things.
The doc, we're talking about mental health, individuals, the black woman, females, relationships. But right now, just the mental health associated with the last few days, when it rains, do the pumps work, post Katrina, preparing for Marco, that was going to flood.
Yeah.
Laura on the way. In the midst of this pandemic, sum all of that up for us right now, and how fragile our mental health is, and what needs to be happening, especially so we don't experience some of the trauma we experienced post-Katrina in our younger population, and many business people, and with suicides amongst our elders. Dr. Dunham.
Yeah, it's so layered, you know, and it seems like now, more than ever, it's just like it's not just a 1-2 punch, it's a 3-4-5-6 punch coming at us right now. And so it really does beg for us to figure out how do you maintain your sanity in the midst of all of this. And part of the conversation around post-traumatic stress disorder is the notion of re-experiencing trauma over and over again, which continues to allow that condition to be alive, if you will. But resiliency speaks to us being able to figure out how to not be totally succumbed or overwhelmed or rendered not functional in the face of trauma. And 'cause we will continue to have events like this. My opinion of Corona is that until there is a vaccine, there will be masking up, wash up, keep your distance. And the vaccine is probably maybe another several months, if not a year away, and in a way that anybody would really feel comfortable taking it, I would say. That's my opinion. But with everything that's going on, at some point, you have to be able to separate yourself from the event and the impact of it. What do I mean by that? So there is a level of detachment that you gotta do at some point in order to maintain your sanity. Our emotional balance has a lot to do with how much we allow ourselves to be emotionally assaulted over and over and over again. So in your own head, you have to find the conversation, create the conversation, hear the conversations, be involved in the conversations that really do give you relief from all of this. There's only so much watching of this that we can do. So at some point, you have to turn all this stuff off and not listen to it. Just touch base, check in periodically, put yourself on what somebody termed a news diet. And just not hear all of this, because a lot of it's not changing. You need to have some sense of what's going on, but you don't have to hear it 24 hours a day. So put the station on something else or turn the TV off, do something else. For sure, make sure that you don't give up the things that actually do give you some relief. So getting good rest, not taking drugs to get good rest, or something maybe over-the-counter or mild. But get some good rest. If moving and exercising is your thing, you need to do that. Even if it's not, you need to do that. Walk more. Have conversations with people who say things that help you and not hurt you. We have a natural tendency to reach out to people, but everybody's conversation is not worth hearing during these times. It's just not, because it just complicates things even more. So turn off that noise. And turn on conversations that actually soothe you. I'm very spiritually based, and so for me, my perspective on a lot of things is that everything is perfectly ordered by God. You just need to figure out how to get through this one. But that it's going to be okay. We're going to get on the other side of this, but we got to get through it, and you can get through it. So that kind of positive talking and being around people who speak that kind of language is really, really important to our mental health. But the residual from Katrina, this is not Katrina. It feels like Katrina, maybe, mm-hmm. from the perspective of feeling the uncertainty and the fact mm-hmm. that we were rendered so helpless. There's a feeling of helplessness with this. God forbid if you're thinking hopelessly about this, because that's really kind of the end of the road thinking. But a lot of the emotions are familiar, but this is not the same experience. And so we have to stay in the moment and not relive, not continue to go back there. We live that experience. Let's try to stay where we are now. Focus on what we're trying to do now. And there's clear guidance about what we need to do now. As far as all these hurricanes goes, and there's nothing we can do except prepare ourselves and our families as much as we can. Get the heck up out of here if you can and you have to. Don't even think about it. Move and get out of here. If you can't do that, then you do the best you can with supporting your environment, your family, making sure that everybody is as safe as possible. But there's no easy answer to that question, Oliver. There isn't. Okay. And it is a lot. It's a lot that we're having to deal with. So how you spin it in your head is mm-hmm. going to be the key between whether or not it overwhelms you or you stay ahead of it. So you got to do that head work, and you got to be around people, have conversations with people who can do that with you and for you. Stay away from the negativity, the gloom and doom. Those are not the conversations that people need to be involving themselves with right now.
Yeah, that is a you know,
that's a word.
Yeah, that's a word. You know, I think OT, a lot of times people don't realize how far back and how deep trauma can reach. Dr. Dunham, are we now discovering, you know, you hear a lot of people say, this happened to me as a child and I'm still feeling the effects of it. How far back does trauma go?
You know, it's a matter of, was it resolved emotionally? What did you come to a place in your head that settled it? And if you have not settled that in your head and it's still bubbling up through your emotions, then it could go back a week ago. It could go back since birth. I mean, it can go back really, really far. It can also be somebody else's trauma that you're experiencing. You never had it, but you're experiencing it because of the threat of the possibility that one day you could experience that. So, but all of that goes back to how we are thinking about and how we understand events. So therapy is what therapy does. Some people go to treatment. Treatment essentially digs up what's been buried and helps you to look at it again and reprocess it and then hopefully bury it back differently in a different place, in a different packaging that is more suitable for you, that you understand. Because a lot of things happen to us. We don't understand it while it's happening. And, of course, the younger you are, the more you don't understand it. And so when you're older and you're looking at those things, you got more life experiences and more understanding to help maybe understand that. And it doesn't change the fact that it happens, but it changes how you see it. And a lot of what we experience emotionally has everything to do with how we see things. Two experiences, two different people. One person is sick for life as a result. The other person seems perfectly okay. They have the memory, but it's not inhibiting their life. Why is that? That often has to do with how you see it, how you process it, and then constitutionally, if you're not vulnerable to certain things. Some people are just more vulnerable to certain conditions than other people are. But if you don't have those kind of vulnerabilities and you can figure out in your head or you can get help in your head on how to think about it, it wasn't your fault. For example, molestation is carried through the lifespan for most people who have it because they continually are on some level blaming themselves for it happening. And if you continue to blame yourself for an act that was perpetrated against you by somebody else who was clearly ill, then you will continue to be symptomatic as a result. But if at some point in your life you get to that place where you can understand that it's nowhere in the world as a child I could have been responsible for that adult's behavior. Even if it was a pleasurable experience, I still, the physical pleasure of it, I still was not responsible for that. So it has a lot to do with how you're able to change your perspective on what happened, that the symptoms go away or they stay. Doesn't matter what it was, how profound it was, you know, how involved you were in making it happen or not stopping it. You have to at some point come to terms with or come to grips with understanding that experience differently in order for you to emotionally feel different.
OT, we got Brother Sekou. We got Brother Sekou on the line. You're on live with OT, Dr. Dunham, the early bird and the prof. Good morning, Brother Sekou.
Good morning. How y'all doing? Yeah, beautiful conversation. And I see Dr. Solomon that called up and put it out there. Really, what was really going on with the African-American population in this country. And Dr. Dunham, yeah, I've been keeping an eye on the Metropolitan Mental Health Service that y'all have, right?
Yes, that's correct. And substance use.
Yeah, I've been seeing it in magazines. I see it on the news. I see it in other sources. And I've even contacted some of your staff trying to get some help for individuals that I care for, and basically we told me they can't do nothing unless they come on their own. Here's what I want to say. The difference between, you know, PTSD, post-traumatic slave disorder, is real, and we can see it in the historical context. We have had some important work done by Black sociologists and definitely Black psychologists, Gray and Cobb on Black Rage, James Baldwin also always quote made this quote, to be black and relatively conscious in America is to be in a rage almost all the time. And what they're saying is we have internalized some things that we got to get rid of, and some of our people are very healthy psychologically and culturally, and some of our people are not. I'm going to point to something happened last night. I was looking at the Democratic Convention. I mean, the Democratic Republican Convention last night, and they brought Tim Scott on, the black senator from Carolina, and he's the only black person in the Senate, right? And he suffered from post-traumatic slave disorder because he was highlighted by his grandfather, then he embracing an institution controlled by these white racist Republican senators, and he thinks he's in good company. So some of us in different levels of illumination and understanding what's happening with us as a people, and I suggest that there's a body of literature, black literature, black psychologists written that we should, you know, Black Rage, book like the Marco the Oppressed. There's a lot of books like that to be get at an early age. There's a lot of books that were put together by sociologists and psychologists that we got to, as professionals, if anybody who say they're a professional therapist, got to point out people to and to study and read, because they could understand why this racist system, white oppression in America, have made our people feel inferior and internalized negative self-image of ourselves. That's why we attack each other, basically, because we have a negative self-image of each other, and we have internalized a lot of negative views about people, some of us anyway, and the only way you relieve that is through educating yourself and raising your social and political consciousness and become a healthy human being. I'm out of here. I'm going to listen now, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I think he makes some great points, and there's certainly a lot of sociologists, researchers, African-American who have are well published in this area, and we've got a lineage of well documented information in this area. I do agree that you absolutely have to have some level of understanding of what's going on in order for you to even begin to move favorably out of all of this. I'm a little cautious, and I want to be careful how I say this. I'm a little cautious about generally stigmatizing us and making pejorative, conclusive statements about everybody, because every and all is never true, right? And so we have so many varying degrees of health within our race and culture. And even though our history is the same, a history of trauma, when we were brought over to this country and everything thereafter, we do not have the same level of impairment of everybody across our race. And so I'm saying that because we have a lot of strength, and we have a lot of capability, and we have a lot of successes. And we have a lot of people who have done extremely well. We have to also look to that part of our culture to find the strength, the wherewithal, to help those who struggle more to move forward. And so our story is also a great story of resilience as a people, to have survived everything that we have survived, and for so many of us to have done well. Does that mean that anybody is 100% healthy? Absolutely not. But you don't need to be 100% healthy to be okay. But we do need to focus on the successes, as well as we acknowledge the pain of what our life experience has been, our forefathers have endured. But we do also have to focus on our strengths, because that's what helps you get up and put one foot in front of the other and keep moving So having a Kamala Harris as an example for the vice presidency, but not just her, having all of the successful people in our lives, whether they're on, they're celebrities or not, those people, we have to step up and be the example of how well we can be by getting involved with each other. So acknowledge the past, but don't be stuck in the ill health of what's happened. We got to pull up and shine a light on the capability and the successes of people in our race who are doing extremely well. Some of our kids doing extremely well. We need to highlight that.
Doc, very briefly, I'd like you to deal with this issue. You know, and I'll take it from my own family. My father used to make comments about generational health and wellness, right? And we hear these comments all the time. Man, we dealt with those issues before. It's just a weaker generation. You know, everybody have issues. You just got to get over it. Can we rate the degrees of who's stronger mentally, yesteryear or folk now? Because we hear that in our community. Well, you just got a weaker generation. My mama made me eat grapes when I really liked apples. And you hear folks say, well, just get over it. Briefly address that stereotype within our own community because it's real prominent.
That's a good thing to talk about. And I think in one of the other visits to the show, we kind of got into that a little bit, Oliver. But that, in my opinion, has value, but it doesn't move anything necessarily. Well, that has value, I think, and it can help move. Because our set of challenges that we're dealing with are not the challenges of a former generation. But the former generation's challenges probably were just as powerful for them as these are for us. So it's not relative. It's where you are in your place in history and what life deals you at that time and how you're able to deal with it. So it's not so much relative. We have to deal with what we're dealing with and make our contribution or our contribution to the history of what we did during this time valuable to the next generation. And it really is one generation surviving the scenarios of their time of being able to pass on to the next generation so that they have the hope and the perseverance to survive the challenges of their time. So I think that there is, I don't think it should be dismissed as just get over it. But I do think, though, that we do have to embrace our capability now and use our capability and our knowledge of what has come before us to get through what's going on right now. And I think that we are absolutely capable of getting through what's going on right now. I can't imagine being what it was like to be a slave. You can't either. We have no idea.
Well, O.T., we're just about out of time. We certainly appreciate you, Dr. Dunham, joining us.
Absolutely.
And
great
sharing with us. You promise to come back?
Absolutely. We'll be back.
what a great conversation, OT. What a great show.
Another great show. And Prof, all I can say is when you said, you know, that you can't stand them being a slave, I think Nikki B has other ideas for you. So I'll say, put on your cutoff jeans and your ripped T-shirt because she got work for you.
no bottle doubted, as we would say.
No bottle doubted. Love y'all times 10, man. God bless. Everybody stay safe.
All righty. Bye-bye.